Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you in the market for a new home, or do you plan on putting your property up for sale? Well, today on the show, we will discuss home buying and selling with two real estate pros, Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are on the line to answer your questions. So if you have one about selling or buying, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But that number again, 800-348-2551. Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis and your real estate calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. If you're buying or selling a home or residential property, we have you covered today. We have two real estate professionals on the line to answer your questions. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District and also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She's a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. If you have a question, give us a call right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis, Alexander Monticello, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray.
All right. Well, we'll start out with some real controversy and some real terror here in the real estate world. I did my show prep, and I looked at an article today that said home prices are hitting skyrocketing record prices, and they're due for a big bubble explosion and a drop. True or not true, Renata Lewis?
So, well, we are definitely experiencing a low inventory, which means that there is higher buyer demand. And in many cases, this means that we do have multiple offer situations, which does increase the list price. And we are getting overlist offers and contracts that are coming into coming to the table. However, as far as a bubble, I don't see that happening. I don't think we're in this same scenario that we were 10 years ago. I see sellers having a lot more equity in their homes. Buyers have still great buying power because interest rates are great. The only thing I guess we'll be watching is just, you know, job losses, unemployment, all of that could soften the market a little bit, but I don't think it's a burst.
Agree or disagree, Alex?
You know, I agree with Renata. I think there is a real lack of inventory. If you look at the latest data from the second quarter here in the Capital Region, you know, month supply of inventory for homes between 175,000 and 225,000 is at record lows, 2.2 month supply. And between 225,000 and 400,000 month supply of inventory is at 3 month supply. These are down 38% or 34% from the previous year. So I think, as Renata pointed out, this lack of supply is, forcing, a real imbalance in the demand.
Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551, if you have a real estate question for Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. And we start out with Jesse and Troy. Hello, Jesse.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was about Zillow, and you know, it gives these kind of home valuations for homes that are not on the market, and I was just curious as to how reliable those are, because it seems like they vary quite a bit. I know that the market's fairly hot right now, but my house has gone up like probably $30,000 in the last like 2 months or something. I'm not really shopping for a house or anything. I was just kind of curious generally about how accurate you find those valuations to be.
Okay.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. You go first.
So, okay. I have a love-hate relationship with Zillow. I think it's a great resource. A lot of people do use it, so we do look at that. However, you know, it's basing most of its valuations on possible closed sales, and it's only using the statistics that they are generating, and they're not generating from every brokerage, and they're not generating from every sale that actually happens. And they don't go inside your home, so they can't really factor and adjust the valuation based on the condition of the home, improvements of the home, possible location, you know, what's your next door neighbor doing. So I think it's a good start, but at the same time, you need a true valuation based on who you are, what you look like, and how we're going to adjust it to factor into the neighborhood.
Jesse.
Great.
Alex.
Thanks.
All right. Alex, you want to weigh in?
No, I mean, I agree. I think just so you know, Zillow used to have a little bit of a disclaimer on it. I think they said that those estimates were within around 10% of market value. I don't see that disclaimer now, but, you know, they're to Renata's point, they're in the ballpark, but they're not always accurate.
All right, Jesse, thanks a lot for the call. Renata Lewis is here and Alex Monticello. It's Real Estate Today. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jessica is in Del Mar. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I have 5 acres of vacant land in a local village and water and sewer hook up and a nice view and a little bridge across a creek. Is there a way I could market this to take advantage of people in the city who might want to move out now with COVID?
Well, I think when you say the village, which village are you in?
I'm Altamont.
Altamont, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think the best way to do it would be, as far as marketing the property, would be to talk to a couple different real estate agents and get it listed, you know, on the internet, on the MLS. Folks who are downstate, who are looking at properties, just like, you know, anybody, whether they're in New York City or somewhere else, primarily is using the internet to search and find for homes. So that's the first thing. The second thing you might want to look at is going to the village and the building department to see whether the property can be divided, you know, subdivided, or and if so, into how many different potential parcels.
Okay.
So, you know, checking in with the building department is also helpful. But yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely seeing an influx of people from outside the area who are looking to relocate here because it's affordable. And people are looking to move to less dense areas.
Renata.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the real estate agent is located. Excuse me. Sorry.
I know. Well, I feel your pain, Jessica.
Just to clarify, you'd want to get a local real estate agent, right, who knows the area locally. But then, you know, their job would be to market it on the internet and as widely as possible. And the way to do that is using a lot of the big online portals, as well as, you know, social media accounts and the MLS. There's a couple different MLSs here that are worthwhile to be putting in. But if you talk to a local real estate agent, they can market it that way.
All right, Jessica, thank you very much. Renata, you want to weigh in before we take a break here?
And the only thing I would add to that is, you know, vacant land is, if you could just disclose as much as you know about the property, any setbacks, any easements, you know, what type of property can be built on there, does it have to have particular square footage, you know, give the buyers an idea of what that vision looks like, because it helps them with a little bit more clarity on what that land may offer and what the area may offer, which will entice the right buyer to come through.
We are talking real estate today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello join us. And your calls, more of them, and emails at voxpop@wamc.org on the way. It's It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis are here to talk real estate. A couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Chucky. And Chucky writes, my house was a funeral home in the 1890s. Chucky writes, how forthcoming should I be when I put this house on the market? It's an 1830s farmhouse owned by a mortician 130 years ago. I will tell you, Chucky, that there was a time when people were dying to get in that house. You see? Ba-dum-bum. All right, Alex, you go first.
Well, Chucky, I think you should, you know, I'm not really sure what you need to disclose. I think it's a good idea to probably have a conversation with a local real estate attorney. I can tell you in New York State, the rules for disclosure in New York State are such that the seller of a home has an opportunity to complete a property condition disclosure statement, which is a six-page document that lists a variety of potential defects. I do not believe that the one thing that you may need to be aware of is if there were storing chemicals on the property, you might have to disclose that. That's the one thing that I could think of regarding a potential funeral home. But you also could choose not to complete the property condition disclosure statement and provide a $500 credit to the buyer and therefore disclose nothing. That's the other option, and not complete the statement.
Renata, is there any rule in New York or Massachusetts or anywhere else where if you have a ghost in your house, you have to tell the prospective buyer?
I know we've had this discussion over and over again. I don't believe that there is. Listen, if there's something happening right now in your home and it's haunted or you believe there's issues and more people know about it, I think that that disclosure should be out there because people are going to question it.
Have you ever run into that before?
I have not personally. No. I've heard of situations. And I believe it really depends on, like, if this was a funeral home, you know, 100 years ago, how long has it not been a funeral home? So what is the true purpose and use of it today?
Right.
And that's really what you're marketing at this point. If somebody asks the question, you do have to answer it if you know the right answer. Or, you know, buyer beware in New York State and other states where it really is your due diligence to go to the town hall and try to acquire as much history as you can about the property so you know everything about it.
All right. This one is from Grace. Grace says, I'm selling my house. A deck was put on in 1980 with no permits. I bought it in 97. The deck was not an issue, never questioned. Now it's not up to code, and I may be able to get a permit, but is it my responsibility to get up to code before I sell it? And that is from Grace. Alex.
So the answer is no, you're not required to bring your house up to code to sell it if at the time that it was done, it was in compliance with the code. But there's a separate issue regarding permits. And generally, if you're making improvements on the house, you're required, if the town requires a permit, you're supposed to pull the permit. You know, I think given the fact that it's a deck and it's been put on, you know, more than 30 years ago, the lack of a permit may not be an issue. You know, my suggestion would be if it comes up, it's worth, you could at that time go to the town to try to get the permit, but it may not be worth trying to do that now.
All right, back to the phones we go. We are joined today by Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. It's Real Estate Today, 800-348-2551. Deborah in Rhinebeck. Deborah.
Yes.
Hello, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My question was to Renata, just for clarification. You were just speaking about Zillow and asking about home evaluation and saying that Zillow doesn't know how exactly to evaluate because they don't know who you are and what you look like. I don't think that's something that Zillow or anyone should be doing. It sounds like profiling. Am I incorrect on that?
I didn't mean the person in the individual. I meant the house. So they don't know.
Oh,
they
okay.
haven't been inside the house. They haven't evaluated the interior condition of the home. They don't have the improvements that you have actually done. So even like on, you know, you have the Google Maps and the Google Earth, they'll do the exterior views for you, but they haven't been inside. So that's what I meant. I apologize.
Right. Okay, good. No problem. I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, no. It has nothing to do with the individual that owns it.
All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Jen in Clifton Park. Jen, you're on.
Hi. I'm seeing a lot of listings on Zillow and Realtor.com saying sold before list or sold before print. In this market where things are going so quickly and it seems so hot in a certain price range, how does a prospective buyer get a jump on that type of property?
Hmm. Renata.
Well, I...
Oh, all right. Well, Alex, then.
Go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, right? But working with a buyer's agent who knows the local community and can make phone calls, pound payment, unfortunately, you know, who's got their ear to the ground, that's really one of the only ways that you can do that. It's you're right. It's a tough market, and inventory is selling sometimes before it even hits the market.
Renata, you want to?
It's feeling like it's a real inside job.
Yeah.
So I mean, so the inside job should not be happening. Anything that's going on the market really should be by the MLS and the Greater Capital Association Realtors is saying. If you're going to be marketing something, it really needs to be marketed and collaborated with all the other brokers. Is it still happening? Unfortunately, it is still happening. But what's also happening is if a listing goes on the market at 8:00 in the morning, if you're not out there looking at it 2 hours later, there's a good chance that it could already be sold by that afternoon or that evening.
Wow.
So it's really imperative that you're speaking, whoever you're working with, that you do have a buyer representative and an agent that's representing you as a buyer that's on top of all the listings that are coming out every hour, every 15 minutes, whatever it takes. So they're staying on top of it. They're letting you know when that listing comes on the market and whether you or that listing or that agent is the buyer's agent is taking looking at that listing for you so you can prepare and putting in an offer if it meets your criteria and it's something that you're interested in purchasing.
All right, Jen. Jen's dumbfounded. All right, well, you know, I'm with you there, Jen, but thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. We are joined today on this Real Estate Edition by Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. Let's go to Dave in Albany. Dave, you're on.
Hey, guys, I had a question. I'm not in the market of selling my house now, right now, but maybe down the road, is there a fee or anything, or would you guys still come out and look at it and tell me what you would ask for? Or do I have to have a
contract?
Do I have to put it on the market?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, contract.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if you call an agent, they'll come in, they'll sit down with you. I think the most important for me working with a seller is let's take a look at the house. Let's be proactive. See if there's any improvements that need to happen, maybe a few rooms that need to be painted. And at that point, we can discuss how to get the house ready for the market for when you're ready to put it on the market. And at the same time, maybe fix little leaks or anything else that could potentially come up during a home inspection. And we could absolutely review the market and what's happening right now, depending how far out you are from putting the house on the market. Those numbers may change based on what the market trend is doing then. However, we could at least get a good ballpark of where it could be and, you know, what we can do to improve it. So when you're ready, you know, we can jump in with both feet and not have to worry about the little things last minute.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. Alex, do you want to make a comment on that?
No, I agree with Renata. We don't charge, or most agents wouldn't charge to come out and provide that initial assessment.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Real Estate Today with Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. And let's see who's been waiting the longest here. Looks like Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question I don't know if you can help me with. It's kind of a legal technical thing. I have a property that has two rights of way through it, and each of my neighbors that, you know, have these rights of way have something in their deed, you know, describing the right-of-way. There is nothing in my deed that describes it, or them. There's two of them. And I was wondering if that's usual.
It should be in all three deeds. Otherwise, really? If your deed doesn't have, you know, is it a driveway? Is it a part of the parcel that they have access to? What's the right of way for all three parties?
Access to their parcels.
Okay. Because, I mean, if it's not in your deed, you technically don't have to provide the access.
Really?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah. There might be an older deed that had something similar drawn in there. I don't know, Alex. What do you think?
Well, how did you learn about this?
Right.
Well, from my neighbors. And, well, when I bought the house, they told me there were these right-of-ways, you know, so that one person could get back to their property and another could get up to theirs. You know, I'm in the rural area, and that was their only access. Mm. And I was told that when I bought the house. But, I mean, I've looked through the entire, what do they call that, abstract of title.
Mm-hmm.
And nowhere in there does it say anything about rights of way, although it is in my neighbor's deeds.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I think, you know, a couple things. There could be another deed or an amendment that's hanging out there somewhere and just wasn't recorded properly and didn't attach to your deed. But I think this is you're right, it's a very technical legal question, and it's worth talking to a real estate attorney who can fully review the title. It sounds like you've already spoken to a title insurance company, or is that just the title report from your closing that you're looking at? The title abstract.
The actual abstract was given to me by the previous owners.
Hmm. Right. So, yeah.
You
so
know,
I think
it went all the way back to when the house was first built, which was like in 1853 or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is a tricky question, and it's worth talking to a real estate attorney who can properly, you know, review the title and figure out who's right.
All right, Kathy, thank you.
I'm not arguing with them. I mean, I don't know how they could have done the subdivision without putting in an easement of some kind.
Yeah.
Or these people would not have had any access.
Mm. Do you get along with your neighbors?
Happily, yes.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's very good.
Well, that's good. Yeah. You just want to make sure that, you know, in the instance when you're ready to sell the property, or if, you know, if it goes into a trust to family, you just kind of want to protect the, you know, the asset and your best interest to make sure that, you know, that doesn't come back and, you know, become a problem later. So it would probably be worth investigating, and, you know, maybe, okay. I don't know, did you use a real estate attorney when you purchased the property?
An attorney, I don't know if necessarily a real estate attorney. I had one attorney tell me that it doesn't necessarily go in your deed, that it is their deed that they can show to you and say, look, I have access
But
here.
It's your property, right?
Yeah.
This is true.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Question for you both, Alex and Renata. Is there such a thing as a common law rule? In other words, if this goes back to the 1850s or whatever, and there has always been this right of way, at what point does it just become common law?
Well, there is. Sorry, Renata, you go. Okay.
No, what I was going to say, I mean, even in common law, at some point, if you want to protect yourself, it should be written somewhere. Mm. So in the old days, the deeds were, you know, super old, where it would say, you know, your property line starts at the, you know, big boulder rock southeast, you know, at this latitude. Right. And that boulder may no longer be there. So those were slowly revised as the properties transferred to new ownership. Mm. But that's why to this day, titles and deeds are, you know, transferred to new ownerships. And they want to make sure that they all make sense with what the property is that you're purchasing. So it's just interesting and also important to know what it is. And when you're selling it, it's important for others to know what they're buying, because they could technically say, I didn't know I have to give these two people right away, and I don't want to give them right away now. So it could become a big issue for the two people that are using that property.
All right. Well, Kathy, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Jeff in Goshen, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Here's a question. Can you approximately quantify a pricing difference between a 5-acre building lot that has a perk test versus one that does not have a perk test?
What's the cost of a perk test in your area?
I believe it's $700 to $1,000.
All right. So I guess that would be the cost of the perk test, which would be, you know, probably not much, right? Maybe a couple thousand dollars.
Interesting. Uh-huh. So it would quantify out that way. There wouldn't be some other reason that it would be less advantageous to buy the property without a perk test.
There's a lot more risk, right, when you purchase a property without a perk test, because you don't know if you're going to be able to do a septic system, or is it going to be a raised septic system, which is more expensive than a regular septic system, and you know, where can you position it? If you want to put a house in the middle of the property and it doesn't perk well there and it perks better in a different area, that could be an issue. So just resolving that concern for a new buyer is definitely more value as far as I see it, for sure.
Got it. So the cost of the risk might be greater than just the cost of getting the perk test. That makes sense.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes.
Jeff, thank you very much for the call. Alex Monticello is here from Monticello Real Estate, and Renata Lewis from Keller Williams Capital District. It's Real Estate Today on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll take a fast break and then be back to the phones. Vox Pop, Real Estate Today, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, joined today by Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello. Two email here, and then back to the phones. This is rather vague. This is from CT. Best ideas for moving out of state or things to watch out for. Who wants that one? Quarantine for two weeks, right?
Exactly. Quarantine for 2 weeks. Well, it really depends. I mean, are you selling? Are you buying? Do you need the proceeds from your home to buy a new home? I guess it's just really sitting down with somebody and formulating some type of a plan and what that looks like, so we can take it step by step and make sure that when you get to the new area that you are already able buyer and we know what you're doing on this end.
All right. This one is a little more concrete. Alex, you could first try on this one. This is from Ellen in Hillsdale. Ellen says, we're thinking about putting in an in-ground pool. Plenty of space on the land. Does this add to or subtract from the value of the property given the limited months of use in the Northeast? And that's from Ellen in Hillsdale.
This is a great question. So prior to COVID, you know, pools would detract value from most houses. The way I would break it down is I would usually tell people, 50% of the people shopping for a home wouldn't want a pool. And then of the other 50%, half of them don't know they want a pool until it's the middle of July and they show up and it's hot. But now, post-COVID, pools are in demand and houses with pools are selling, in some cases, a lot faster, especially given the hot summer we've had here in the Northeast. So, you know, I would say if you're going to sell in the next few years, putting in a pool may not be the best idea. But if you think you're going to be there for, you know, 7 years or more, then I think an investment in a pool might make sense, and you'll get the use enjoyment of it over that time.
Renata.
Agreed. And, you know, the one thing I'll also say, it really depends what type of pool you're going to be putting in and how are you going to improve the landscaping in the backyard with the pool in it. If you have a very small backyard and the entire backyard is just going to be the pool, you may decrease the value of your property because where are the kids going to play now and where are we going to play ball and just barbecue? So But if you improve the landscaping where you're going to have a space for the pool and still have a space for the family to barbecue and enjoy, I think overall the whole, you know, exterior curb appeal will be improved, and it will look beautiful. And as Alex said, right now during the pandemic, it's the enjoyment and having some privacy of your own, I think, adds extra value to that property.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a real estate question. Penny is in Saratoga. Penny.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. A neighbor has constructed two sheds on his property, one of which is right on the property line, and he also did not get permits and ignored the 5-foot setback. In front of the sheds, he put layers of stone, et cetera, which now compromises our drainage. My question is, do municipalities typically, if I were to bring this to their attention, just fine that person, or do they typically have the person correct the situation and make it as it should be?
Oh, boy.
It really depends on the municipality, and it depends on how far they breached the setback. So you're saying the setback was only 5 feet?
5 feet from the property line, and he built right on up to the property line. As a matter of fact,
right,
he took 18 inches off one of my sheds to correct the property line, and he smack up against it.
Oh, boy.
Right, right. And the fact that now you have drainage issues, and if that's correct, I think that they would make him maybe correct the issue based on him evaluating your property potentially, because now you have drainage issues and potentially standing water. So I think it's a case-by-case scenario. I would,
right,
I would try to talk to your neighbor and see if you guys can, you know, amicably figure this out and try to make it better. Because it, you know, it
yes,
could be a little bit
tried
of a fight.
Yes.
Say it again, Penny.
Yes, it has been tried more than once.
Oh, boy.
It has been tried more than once.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And there's another letter pending. So, you know, you don't want to ruin the neighborhood, but some people just do whatever they want for their own benefit and don't think about the repercussions.
Yeah. Hey, Penny, I got a question for you. Is your turn signal on, or do you have a grandfather clock in the car? Oh, okay.
No. I'm driving around Saratoga just so I can finish the phone call.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. That's a good one.
Good luck to you.
All right, Alex, do you have any more fine points there to raise on this issue?
Drive safely, Penny. I hope you got hands-free.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to John and Tibley. John.
Hello there.
Hello.
Thank you for my call.
Sure. You're on.
So I have just taken my 75-hour real estate course, and I'm wondering.
Congratulations.
I'm sorry?
I said congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay.
So I guess the next thing I have to do is get a sponsor and also then take the state test.
You need a sponsor?
Correct.
Is that true?
That's correct.
What do you need a sponsor for?
You have to hang your license with a real estate broker, and you can't be a broker right away. So you need to practice underneath a broker, and they're going to be taking your license.
So it's like indentured servitude, yeah?
Yeah. You need to learn.
Oh, that's interesting. So you have to have a sponsor, and then you have to work in a brokerage, not yours, and then you take your test? Is that how that works?
No, he has to take the Department of State test before he can hang his license with a broker.
Ah, okay.
So I would schedule your test as soon as possible so you don't forget what you learned. And as soon as you pass that test, you know, start interviewing some brokerages to see who's a good fit for you. And that's where you're going to begin to practice once you have that sponsorship already approved.
John, good luck with a new career. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate Today with Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. Rick in Pittsfield. Hello, Rick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Quick question is, if an appraisal comes in, but the appraiser didn't include the fact that there is a known Title V failure and an engineering issue, i.e., some of the piers sinking and cracking the kitchen floor. How do you deal with the appraisal that didn't include those in the appraisal?
Hmm. What's a Title V failure?
In Massachusetts, if your septic system doesn't pass inspection, it's called a Title V failure.
Okay, got it. Well, so the appraiser, keep in mind, the appraiser is not the home inspector, right? So they're not going to necessarily be looking for structural defects. They're really going to be, they're going to assume there aren't any structural defects, and they're going to assess the house based on square footage, condition, location, size, and comparable homes in the area.
So wouldn't the buyer or the seller?
Go ahead, Rick.
I'm saying, wouldn't part of the condition be the effect that the kitchen is cracked and there's a trip hazard in the kitchen and? Unfortunately, this is a divorce situation.
Yeah.
To me, the house was appraised way beyond its value. And I try to challenge you by getting another appraisal, but the second appraisal won't give me a price until there's an engineering report that values the engineering defect.
Right. Well, I guess that sounds reasonable, right? So if you want to, you would have to explain what the cost would be to make these repairs, and then they could adjust the appraisal accordingly. I mean, normally,
as a professional appraisal, shouldn't those two facts have been picked up? I mean, the past title was bought with a defect for the Title V, for the septic. Again, a known issue, not a hidden issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, unfortunately, the appraisers, they move quickly, right? And they don't spend a lot of time looking at the house, and they're certainly not inspectors. So they're not usually going after, they're not on the hunt for these issues. And they also don't have the ability to quantify it either if they found it. So I think that's part of the reason why they don't look for them. I think you're right. And if you were buying the house, it certainly would impact the market value, and you'd negotiate these issues.
Renata.
Correct.
Well, what I was going to say is, I mean, you could challenge the appraisal, but you would need something to challenge it with. So that means you would need to get an engineer report or prove that this has a defect of that sort. And or you could try to get your own appraiser and have the appraiser have all the knowledge that you're disclosing right now, and see if that value comes in any different. Again, the appraiser works for the bank, and they just appraise the house to basically number of bedrooms, number of baths, location, condition. They don't really know the defects unless they're completely disclosed.
Rick?
Opposing counsel, that's all. Okay.
Say it again, Rick.
In this case, the appraiser just works for opposing counsel. It's a matter of valuing the house for the divorce.
Hey.
But my issue is, I didn't understand how a professional appraiser could not have included these things, and you're saying not his bailiwick. That's not his concern.
Yeah. Typically, it's the home inspection happens first, and whatever home defects we find during a home inspection, if it's significant enough, then we would flag it to the bank. Typically, the home inspections are settled separately, and whether it's with credits or the seller taking care of it, and the appraiser is basically there appraising the house based on whatever that credit is or whatnot. They're just in there appraising the house and the value for what it was settled at that point.
Rick, thank you very much for the call, and good luck. Hope everything works out for you. Steven in Monticello. Steven, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. So I'm the same name as, Miss Monticello or Mr. Monticello?
My town. Mr. Monticello.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I was just thinking of something clever to say. Anyway, so what should a mortgage cost for a $100,000 home? The home has been appraised last year at $96,000. It's a reverse mortgage that I'm buying back from the bank from my mother's through my mother, and she passed away last year, unfortunately. Thank you. I appreciate it. What should a mortgage cost on a $100,000 home? I mean, reasonable cost. I have no idea what to expect at this point. And I am talking to a broker at the moment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Renata.
So it's tough because these reverse mortgages get you, and there is a high percentage of
I guess, interest that accrues with each payment that they give back. How long did she have the reverse mortgage for?
Well, it's about $119,000 right now. However, since the house has been appraised by a HUD certified appraiser two and a half years ago at 96, from what I understand, it's called a short sale, and I only have to pay back 95% of the 90. Let's say it's 96, whatever the value is that it's appraised at. If it's below what is owed on the house, it's called a short sale. If I'm not mistaken,
correct.
I'm pretty sure I'm right
correct.
About that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So,
so it's a short sale,
so much,
and the bank. Yeah, the bank that's carrying the mortgage will be the one that you have to negotiate with to see if they'll accept a short sale. Because what's going to happen is if you don't buy that house, the bank is going to try to resell that house on their own. And if you're right, and if the value is only at $96,000, they're going to want to work with you because they have a ready, willing, able buyer right now to make this purchase rather than holding it onto it and selling it later. But it is a lot of tape that you have to get through.
Stephen.
Sure. I've already filed for a short sale through them. I forget what the heading of the paper.
Yeah.
So, and they approve that at this point, but it still has to be appraised this year. And I understand you have, 16 weeks after an appraisal to close on the house? Otherwise, you have to get it appraised again?
It varies in different areas and what the bank stipulates, but you should, you should probably get a current appraisal to see what it's appraising at today, and or like
an EPO,
like a broker's price opinion. Like I just had one that I did not too long ago. I think it closed in March, and they just needed a broker's price opinion, so I did one for them, and I was able to prove, you know, where that number needed to be, and they accepted it. But they were only short about $7,000, so it wasn't a big difference.
Okay.
If it's more than that, they'll probably need a true appraisal to work with in order for them to approve that short sale for you.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much. Running out of time here, a few minutes left. Let's go to Laurel in Central Massachusetts. Hi, Laurel, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling about a piece of property that my husband and I own. It's a little under 5 acres. It's a pasture leading down to a great pond that has a 125-acre pond. Our house is worth very little. It's an 800-square-foot home that was built in 64, and it really appraises for maybe $250,000, maybe $275,000. The land, however, is one of the nicest pieces of property left in central Massachusetts, going down to this pond, and we're at an elevation of 1,098 feet. We've talked to a couple of realtors, and there is absolutely nothing that they can use to comp this property. And so they have told us that we would probably be better off trying to sell it ourselves.
Hmm.
And I'm interested in what you guys have to say about that.
Wow. Alex.
Well, I think if you, without seeing the property, I think it's interesting that you've had multiple real estate agents there who've advised you to sell it yourself. Maybe have you talked to residential or commercial agents?
Residential, because it's zoned residential. And actually the property, we have two lots. We have one lot that the house is on that is 3.65 acres, and then we have another grandfathered buildable lot that's about 1.65 acres.
Hmm.
And did you
they're
say
all together
to
and
a-
Yeah, we have 600 feet of waterfront. Yes, we have 600 feet of waterfront.
Wow. Okay.
And do you own that pond as well?
No, it's a 125-acre great pond. It's one of the last clean ones left in Mass.
Cool.
Well, I think it's probably still worth my suggestion would be talk to a couple different agents to see if anybody else has any other opinions. I think the advantage of working with a real estate agent is they might have some ideas on how to market it differently. They'll have access to the MLS. They'll know the market.
They've told us that they can't comp it. They can't even come up with a price.
Okay.
The only price they can come up with is basically the price for the house. And we know the piece of land is worth a lot more than that.
That's very familiar with the area.
Say it again, Renata.
We have
an appraiser.
We have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm afraid, Laurel, this sounds like a good problem to have because it sounds like you got a great property there, but we're out of time, so I apologize about that. That'll have to be it today. Renata Lewis, how do they find you on the internet if they would like to find you on the internet?
Just either Google my name or at Renata's Homes, and you'll get all the information right off of that.
All right. Alex Monticello, how do people find Alex Monticello on the internet if they want to find Alex Monticello on the internet?
They can go to our company website at MonticelloNYS.com.
All right, you two, this was a good time. I appreciate you both being here, and I hope things go very well. And if either of you sell a home that has a ghost, I'd like to hear about it because I think that'll be our topic on the next show.
Okay? We sure will. Next topic. Thank you, Ray, so much. Thank you, everyone.
We'll talk to you all soon.
Ray.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, supporting our community with a temporary closure and continuing to explore art and ideas online. For projects and resources, skidmore.edu/Tang. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, offering a self-guided story reading and walk along the trail behind the Discovery Center, featuring the book Mr. Carner Blue, about an endangered butterfly. AlbanyPineBush.org. And Interim Healthcare, thanking their caregivers working to help people remain safe in their homes, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Well, that's it for today. Once again, thanks to Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Some very thoughtful and good calls. We appreciate them. Thanks to Matt Plummer, who answered the phone, Zach Malloy, our engineer, our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Fred Breglia and Greg Ward will be back on the line. We'll talk gardening tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.